Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with AIB, offering Irish businesses practical knowledge and support to become more sustainable. AIB, for the life you're after.
Now, in the Green Scene today, across the water, a mandate for biodiversity net gain, whatever that means. But first, the incredible world of the newt explored as part of Science Week. We're joined by Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
What's so special about the newt?
Well, there's lots of special things about newts. But the reason we're really excited about newts this week is because, as you say, it's Science Week. And the theme this year for Science Week is regeneration. And the reason why we picked that theme was because we think it covers an awful lot of important conversations that we want to have about science. So we're all talking about things like generative AI, which regenerates information in different forms. You know, we wanted to talk about this idea of regenerating wildlife and biodiversity. And we also wanted to talk about regenerative medicine. And the newt really is one of the champion regenerators in the natural world. So many of us will think of things like a lizard, that when it loses its tail, it can sort of regrow a sort of a tail. But it's not really regrowing a full tail. But actually a newt, which is an amphibian, can really properly regrow even many times over parts of its body.
What parts?
So it can regenerate limbs, but it can even regenerate things like heart muscle and internal organs. And it's not just regenerating sort of a stump, it can regenerate the bone and the different muscle types within it. So it really is, you know, the king of the regeneration world.
So what can we learn from the newt? I mean, is it possible that we could do something to our own genetic makeup to regenerate?
Well, that's exactly what scientists have tried to study. So of course, what happens in us and in other mammals is we have our early stem cells in our embryonic form, but they gradually differentiate to become different kinds of cells in our body, bone or muscle. Now, the same thing happens in a newt as well, and it happens in other amphibians like frogs. But researchers in Japan and the US were able to kind of unpick exactly what's going on with the newt. So what they found was when a limb was removed from a newt, if it was still in its very, very early embryonic stage, the embryonic cells just kicked in and regrew the part of the embryo. But if it was a little bit older, what they found was that the sort of already differentiated cells de-differentiated. So they turned back into their embryonic form. And actually what they found out was that it's red blood cells in the newt that are carrying special compounds that go to the site of injury. So a bit like with us, where we get a cut, our red blood cells bring platelets and we get scar tissue. But the newt is doing something much, much more elaborate. Now, just to sort of keep us in our place, the newt's genome is nearly 10 times the size of ours. So we've got a good bit of unpacking to do in terms of the complexity of this. But that is the hope, particularly for things like cardiac muscle, because we know if someone gets a heart attack, they will damage the muscle of their heart. And at the moment, we can't regenerate that.
Do we know why the newt got this evolutionary present?
Well, it's, you know, there's often payoffs. I mean, one theory is that because we are so much bigger, we can't afford to let part of our heart muscle, for example, go back to its progenitor state because it has to keep beating for us because we're so big. So that could be one argument. And there are often evolutionary trade-offs, which mean you can't just transpose from one thing to another. But it's certainly very interesting, this idea that one could temporarily regenerate parts of our body.
We're going to see a huge newt on the streets of Dublin.
That is right. Alf the newt, created by Machnus, working with us at Research Ireland for Science Week, has created Alf the newt. At the moment, he's in Collins Barrack, but he's going to be in Dublin all week. And on Thursday evening, he's going to do a spectacular parade, complete with drummers and fire, from Capel Street to Dublin Castle. And everyone is invited to come along and see Alf. And I suppose it's about having those conversations about how incredible he is. I mean, part of the story is he's in Dublin because his habitat has not been maintained, and we need to think about regenerating those.
Do we have newts here?
We do. Well, Alf is a smooth newt, and that's the only kind of newt that we have here in Ireland. They're about 10 centimetres long, and they live in wetland areas, even though they're a bit like a frog. You know, they have gills when they're little.
How big might they be? I mean, Alf is huge.
Only about 10 centimetres. You don't need to worry about coming across a huge smooth newt. But they're reliant on our wetland spaces. They live in kind of still and slow-moving water. So, you know, for example, the re-wetting of the bogs will be very good for things like our smooth newt population. But again, they're kind of a symbol of, you know, our biodiversity here in Ireland. And that's the other thing that we're thinking about.
People sometimes would think they've seen a lizard.
Exactly.
Now, we do have a lizard, a native lizard.
We do have some lizards here, but I mean, newts, as I said, they're different because they're amphibians, not reptiles. And also, they only have four fingers, whereas a lizard has five.
So if you get up close, start counting.
If you get up close, you can count the fingers.
Now, I want to talk to you about biodiversity net gain and the push for fair compensation for genetic resource use. What's that?
Yeah, so this is some new policies which might help us to preserve our biodiversity because, you know, really it is one of the most critical things we can do at the moment. So biodiversity net gain is a concept that came up in the UK. And what it does is it says to developers, if they're going into an area to do a development, they need to ensure that the biodiversity value of the site increases by at least 10%. So rather than removing biodiversity, they actually have to increase it. And researchers in the UK have come up with metrics to measure this. So they've looked at kind of the types of habitat, the size of the habitat and the quality of the habitat. So, for example, a big green space lawn would probably have a lower value than, for example, a small wooded area that might be very rich in biodiversity.
But many of the developments don't have any even lawn.
That's true.
It's just concrete.
And we need to start thinking differently now. So when we're looking at development sites, some parts of it might be brownfield, as you say, some could be greenfield sites. But what we need to do is plan in how we're going to put biodiversity back in to those spaces. Now, look, this is not going to be straightforward, but we have seen examples of it, you know, where developers have put in new wetlands, they've actually started new forested areas. So exactly, a space that is maybe just greenfield now, you could actually increase the biodiversity value by putting in wetlands. And we talk about that, even the simplicity of putting a pond in your back garden, you know, does great things for biodiversity.
There's that other thing, you know, the way the Part 5, the developers were able to buy their way out of Part 5, a provision of social housing, that in Britain there'll be the provision to buy offsets. In other words, you can cover something that is full of biodiversity with concrete. And then down in Somerset, you buy another field and you grow a few hedges and a pond.
Yeah, and look, we've talked about the many difficulties with offsets before. You know, they require really, really careful monitoring to make sure they are genuine. And this is a new concept, but it is one that is being picked up by other countries globally. And we are starting to see some benefits. So, I mean, it's a bit like coming up with a proper price for carbon. If we can do this right, it makes sense. And it should help us to you know, maintain our biodiversity while also doing things like putting in housing and the other resources that we need.
And things like, you know, hedgerows, wildflower meadows and all that sort of thing. I mean, instead of having a neatly groomed lawn around a new, say, apartment development, you have a shaggy wildflower meadow. And the developer says, that's my contribution.
Well, I think we're all getting used to those sort of spaces now. You know, that in fact, what we maybe grew up with thinking were the best things in terms of green spaces, we now know maybe they don't have as much biodiversity. So I think, you know, we'll all get used to that. But the critical thing is that we use science to inform what's going on. So we actually can measure these things. We then need the policies and the regulation to make sure they're actually implemented.
Yeah. I was hearing something yesterday, I think it was, about the extermination of lots of insects. I don't know whether you heard about this.
I mean,
that, you know, driving along in your car, instead of having it spattered with loads of dead insects when you get off the motorway, there's virtually none.
I mean, we know that insect populations globally are in crisis.
And that means the birds have a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's all interconnected, Pat, as we know. But I mean, part of the problem is we don't even have a full sort of inventory of all of the insects on Earth. But we certainly know that their numbers are dropping. And as you said, we are dependent on them for pollinators. And they are very early part of that food web for other creatures.
Now, talk to me about digital sequence information, DSI, and levies that might be imposed. What's that about?
Well, this is another way to recognise the value of biodiversity because actually many of our medicines come from natural products. And for example, many people may know that a lot of cancer medications come from things actually that are found in the ocean. So, you know, they use some sort of compound that's found in the ocean.
And the old aspirin, salicylic acid.
Exactly, yeah. from willow bark is a very good example. But one of the sort of questions is there might be certain plants and things that are only found in one area. You know, if a research or pharmaceutical company has gone in and essentially taken that resource and patented it in a drug. And a question is, should there be some sort of cost there to whoever is profiting from that that goes back into preserving the biodiversity in these spaces. Because one of the calls to preserve biodiversity is actually to say, look, there could be really important compounds in places that we will never find because we will destroy them before we find them. So this idea came from one of the COP, the COP conference recently on biodiversity. And the idea was to have a 1% tax on profits derived from drugs, where drugs were derived from a natural product. And these would go back into to biodiversity preservation. Now, obviously, you have some pharmaceuticals coming out saying, you know, they don't like this idea. But we need to sort of reconsider, I think, that the natural world actually underpins everything to do with our economy. Yeah. I mean, whether you're talking about sucking fossil fuels out of the earth, if you consider that part of the earth's resources, if you talk about biodiversity, a functioning sort of ecosystem underpins every aspect of our economy.
Already, as you say, the pharmaceutical companies have been moaning about this.
They have. I mean, what they're saying is, you know, oh, we might lose jobs if we have to do this. And I think this is where global action is important, because what people will want to see is fairness, so that they will want these things applied everywhere to everybody, so it's a level playing field. And of course, that's where a more polarized world makes these things more difficult to implement. Because
you can't imagine Donald Trump imposing any of this in the American economy.
It's hard to see at the moment. It's hard to see at the moment. But that's where I think, you know, Europe really has an opportunity, you know, to step up in leadership. But if we fail to recognise the value, you know, both sort of in every way of biodiversity, you know, I think we are already ruining its loss. But
killing
we will rue
the
its
goose.
Loss. Absolutely.
Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland. Ruth, thank you very much for joining us. Now, come